at peace. He'd been a good smuggler once, with all the bravado and addiction to excitement that they all suffered from to one degree or another. And then the universe had worn him down, beaten him, until he was a third-class bounty hunter carrying bad debts in desperation. Han could have gone down the same path, become another Bossen Ray. That he hadn't was equal parts luck and perversity of character. He didn't really see how he could take credit for either one. Leia walked to him. Her blaster was still in her hand.
"Thinking about him?" she asked.
"Thinking is the only man I've ever known who stole from Jabba the Hutt and died of something else," Han said. "And then he saved us."
"Complicated."
"The universe is a complicated place," Han said. "Unless you're Luke."
"You don't think he's complicated?"
"No. He's a farm boy who loves flying his fast ship. You don't get much simpler than that."
"He won't stay that way," she said. And there was regret in her voice.
"No one does."
Chapter 30.
"Looks complicated,"
Han said in what he was pretty confident was the universe's greatest understatement.
"It's a planet-scaled mechanism using technology we don't understand in a language that's not only alien, but dead. So, a little bit, yeah,"
Scarlet said, pointing at the blinking device.
"He did make some progress, though. If I can figure out which one of these was affecting the relays, I think we can..." "Don't touch that one!"
Han yanked back his finger.
"That one? Is it dangerous?"
"I think so," Scarlet said. "This baby's channeling an impressive amount of energy. Galassian has a lot of notes about small imbalances getting big quickly. And you know, a giant force field keeping the planetary crust from collapsing into the exposed core? Don't want to turn that off."
She tapped something and the screen lit up. She moved through several pages of translations of the control panel's runes and diagrams without slowing to read them.
"Can you tell what he was doing?"
Leia asked, trying to read the information flashing across the table.
"Not really, no." "All right,"
Leia said, grabbing Scarlet's hands to stop her from touching the panel.
"General Ryken is going to jump in with the strike force. Once he's here, we can figure out how to keep any Imperial ships from jumping into the system. Then we'll have time to..."
The first blaster shot passed so close to Leia's face, Han saw the flash reflected in her eyes. A volley of shots followed it, but Han had already grabbed Leia and Scarlet and pulled them to the ground. He tried to cover Leia's body with his own, knowing it would only buy her a few seconds, but doing it anyway. The first blaster shots that hit the fragile control board would blow it apart, and then there would be nothing between him and death. Han turned to find whoever was shooting. The round door had irised open silently behind them, and a mass of stormtroopers had taken position just outside the platform. Several lowered their weapons to aim at him on the ground.
"This is it,"
he had time to think, and they opened fire. After several seconds of continuous fire from half a dozen troopers, they stopped. The thin sheet of what looked like glass that held up the control panel didn't even have a scorch mark on it.
"Huh,"
Scarlet said.
"I guess they built their stuff to last,"
Han said, then rolled off Leia into his knees. He pulled Bossen's blaster and took several shots around the side of the control board. It was actually sort of nice to have cover he could see through. He could place his shots without having to risk sticking his head out. A second later, two troopers were down, and the rest had ducked back out of the doorway. They reached their weapons around the edge to take a few indirect shots, but only one of them hit the panel, and it did no damage.
"Still going to be hard to hold this position,"
Scarlet said.
"We have to reopen the hyperwave relays,"
Leia shouted.
"If we can signal General Ryken to start the attack..." "Little busy right now,"
Scarlet said.
"We can't let them take control of it,"
Leia said. She moved in a crouch to the other side of the panel and began firing at the doorway, forcing the stormtroopers to pull back.
as Han and Leia traded ineffective shots with the stormtroopers, Scarlet studied the control panel. I think I found the thing that's blocking the hyperwave relays from sending messages out. Maybe. Do it! Leia shouted over the top of the fusillade of blasts from the stormtroopers. Han managed to drop one with a shot to the thigh, and the trooper dragged himself away from the doorway and out of sight. Han could see where his shots were landing, but he'd be much more accurate if he actually stood up and sighted down the blaster. Another wave of incoming fire splashing against the control panel convinced him it wasn't worth the risk. He didn't need to win this fight, really. He just needed to survive it. Han pulled his hand back to avoid the next barrage of shots, but Leia leaned out and fired off a few blasts that downed another stormtrooper.
How many do you think are left out there?
Han asked. Pretty soon it will be all of them on this planet, she replied. Scarlet grunted out a laugh, but didn't look up from her work.
At least Wedge and Luke guaranteed we won't have that Star Destroyer dropping reinforcements,
Han said, firing off a couple more shots as punctuation. His blaster started flashing at him, so he pulled a charge pack from his belt and reloaded.
Luke! We'll call Luke!
Leia shouted, scrabbling at her comlink.
Red Wave, this is Pointer. Are you there?
Uh-oh,
Han said to no one in particular. The stormtroopers were doing something just outside the door. He could only see the edge of their activity, but it looked as if they were setting up some sort of tripod-mounted heavy weapon.
Red Wave, this is Pointer. Come in!
Probably getting some interference from being so far underground, Scarlet said.
One of us has to make a break for it, Leia said. Get far enough up that we can ask Luke to tell General Ryken to start the attack, and then get back down here so that we know when he's through.
Another really bad plan,
Han muttered. Leia said something else, but it was drowned out by the massive concussion of the stormtrooper's heavy weapon. They wheeled it around the doorway and fired it. They hadn't taken time to aim, so the blast hit a meter and a half in front of the control panel. The thin grating of the floor instantly turned white with heat.
I hope our cover can survive a hit from that,
Han said.
I hope the floor can,
Leia replied. The big cannon fired again, this time hitting the control panel's single fragile-looking support. The concussion of the blast knocked Han onto his back and sucked the wind out of his lungs. Both Leia and Scarlet were tossed across the floor, rolling to a stop several meters away. The blast had left a discoloration on the support glass, a vaguely yellowish spot with tiny hairline cracks running through it. They couldn't afford to let the troopers hit them again with the big gun. Not if it could actually damage the only thing they could hide behind. Scarlet and Leia began crawling across the floor back to the control table. The stormtrooper crew manning the cannon were lining up a second shot. They seemed to have noticed the damage the first shot had done and were trying to hit the same spot again.
Hey!
Han shouted.
You know that thing you're shooting at controls the planet, right? What happens if you blow it up? You don't know!
The stormtroopers ignored him. Han popped up, his arms braced on the top of the table to get one clean, accurate shot. The trooper at the back of the cannon was just about to fire when Han's blaster bolt hit one of the supporting legs and blew it apart. The big cannon canted forward, pulling the gunner along with it. Halfway to the floor, the weapon fired, hitting the grating just a little over a meter from the crew with a sound like thunder. The blast hurled the entire crew away. Two of them lay motionless and smoking. The third unlucky man went over the edge of the grating and pinwheeled down and out of sight toward the molten core. Han hoped for the stormtrooper's sake that the blast had killed him before he went over. A few other stormtroopers peeked around the corner of the doorway at the carnage. Han drove them back. The Kakaibak control panel glowed under his arms. He hesitated, then tapped at it and ducked back down.
How are we doing?
He asked.
I'm okay, Leia said, crawling back over to her side of the control board and taking over, blaster in hand.
She didn't look okay. There was a trickle of blood running from her hairline and down her cheek, and her forehead was bruised. She'd get upset if he pressed the issue, so he let it drop. Scarlet groaned.
Are you all right?
Han asked the spy. The wound in her leg looked bad.
I'm fine,
she said, but she seemed a little unsteady.
I just need to...
She wobbled up to her feet to look at the control board, which took her out of cover. The stormtroopers crowded the doorway to fire at her. Too many for Han and Leia to drive back all at once. Scarlet yelped and dropped to her knee, clutching her elbow. The troopers paid for it, with two more dead before they could withdraw.
This is getting old,
Scarlet said. She was examining her upper arm, where a blaster bolt had burned through the flesh just above her elbow. It was another ugly wound, but it wasn't bleeding.
Can you believe today's the first time I've ever been shot? Years in the field, nothing. Today, shot twice.
No, Han said. Anyone as reckless as you should be getting shot all the time.
Sort of thought it would never happen to me,
Scarlet continued. Han hoped she wasn't going into shock. One of the stormtroopers leaned out and tossed an explosive device. It rolled across the floor at them. Han shot it, sending it rolling in the opposite direction. The stormtroopers peeking out ducked back just before it blew up right outside their doorway.
There might be a pattern, though,
Scarlet said. Her eyelids were drooping, and she started to sag onto her back.
We should ask him.
Sure, sweetheart. I'll give him a call, whoever he is,
Han said.
Leia, grab her med pack and give her something to keep her on her feet.
Leia pulled the pack off Scarlet's belt and started rummaging through it.
Did you hear what she said earlier? Force fields and tricky to balance energies?
Han asked.
That means we can blow this place.
Are you insane?
Leia asked.
If we figure this device out, it ends the war.
If.
It ends the war,
she repeated, looking up from her work to stare him in the eye. Han didn't know how her eyes could be that soft and that hard at the same time.
No more Alderaans. No more Kiamers. Never again, Han. What is that worth? We stay here. We hold this position until General Ryken comes.
A stormtrooper risked a quick look into the room, but Han put a blaster bolt into the doorframe right next to his face, and he pulled back.
We can't do it,
he said, keeping his pistol trained on the same spot, waiting to see if the trooper would peek out again.
And even if we could, you're talking about making a government with absolute power to control travel. The first government that can enforce its laws without anybody slipping through the cracks.
Leia pressed an injection ampule to Scarlet's neck, then began winding a bandage around her arm. The spy mumbled something unintelligible.
This isn't the time for that conversation,
Leia shouted. But a few seconds later, she went on.
You say that like it's a bad thing. Only criminals would have anything to worry about.
Han laughed and fired a few shots at a trooper who'd looked around the corner to take a few desultory blasts at him.
Leia, I hate to break it to you. We're criminals. I'm shooting at the government right now. That's why they call it a rebellion?
We're fighting to restore...
Yeah, the glorious republic of old,
Han snorted.
I've heard the sales pitch, sister. But tell me this, if that glorious republic had had this technology, would it have stopped Palpatine from taking control?
Leia opened her mouth to answer, then closed it and frowned. Han stood up and fired off a few more shots at the doorway. No one was visible, but he wanted it to stay that way. Scarlet blinked and sat forward, rubbing her eyes.
Probably not,
Leia finally admitted.
By the time anyone realized what he was up to, he controlled the bureaucracy.
And would there now be a rebel alliance?
Han asked gently. He trusted her to see what he saw. He didn't need to browbeat her into it.
No,
she said. Her expression was almost hurt.
I'd never misuse this, you know. I'd never let anyone else either.
Scarlet coughed and struggled to focus on them.
What are we talking about?
She asked. But they both ignored her.
I know you wouldn't,
Han said.
I trust you, princess. But the guy who's elected after you? I don't know him.
Leia frowned and looked away. Something moved in the shadows on the other side of the doorway, and Leia took a quick shot at it. Whatever it was stopped moving.
If we take this,
Han said, using his blaster to wave at the massive machine all around them,
the next evil galactic empire that rises never ends. Does the fact that we probably won't be there to see it make you feel better?
No, Leia said. No, you're right. Let's blow it.
Han let out a long breath.
I've got to admit, it's a huge relief to hear you say that,
he said with a grin. Leia frowned at him, confused. Her eyes went wide.
You already set it to collapse?
Yeah, that one thing Scarlet told me not to touch. I touched it about a minute ago. But I was having trouble figuring out how to break the news.
Chapter 31.
What did you do?
Scarlet asked, staring down at the planet's core as it shifted from dull red to a brighter orange.
What did you do?
The platform trembled, and a hot wind blew up from below through the grating, a gentle presentiment of worse things to come. Han stood up, but a barrage of fire from the stormtroopers drove him back down into cover.
We can't get out the way we came in, he said. Think I could explain to those guys that we should all be leaving?
Leia didn't answer.
There!
She pointed at a nearby platform, where there was a set of irising doorways, the twins of the ones on their platform.
We need to get to that one.
Long jump, sweetheart,
Han said. It was at least 15 meters from the edge of their platform to the one she was pointing at.
Your grapnel,
Leia said to Scarlet.
Would it reach that far?
Scarlet shifted her gaze between them, struggling to put Leia's question together with the one she'd asked.
Yes,
Scarlet said, nodding. She was moving her head too fast. The drugs Leia had pumped into her to keep her from going into shock were making her jittery.
But nothing to secure it on this side. The magnet's only on the grapple end.
An electronic voice came from the doorway, yelling,
Go! Go! Go!
And seven stormtroopers rushed into the room, shooting wildly. Han and Leia returned fire from cover. But Scarlet stood up and fired over the top of the control panel. When the troopers were finally driven back to the doorway, they left three of their number behind on the grating. Several blaster bolts had passed close enough to Scarlet to singe her hair and shirt.
Please stop doing that, Leia said. Getting shot three times in one day won't be better.
The core below shifted from orange to yellow, and the platform shook more vigorously. A gentle rain of dust and pebbles fell toward the core from the rocks above.
We should leave now,
Han said.
There!
Leia shouted, pointing up at a bright metal support arm for the platform above them.
Attach it there. We should be able to swing across.
Swing across? Scarlet repeated.
That's crazy.
It'll work, Leia insisted.
Trust me.
Scarlet shrugged and handed her blaster to Han. She pulled the grapnel ring off her belt and programmed in the length of the line she wanted.
I'll be exposed while I'm doing this, she said, and while we're swinging across.
I've got you covered. Get it set up,
Han said. When Scarlet moved off to the edge of the ramp to line up her grapnel shot, Han went with her, keeping his back to her and firing into the open doorway with both blasters as fast as he could pull the triggers. When one started to flash a warning at him, he yelled,
Reloading!
And Leia stood up to take over covering fire while he slapped in a new charge. The grapnel line flew off with a smooth hiss, the magnetic head striking the support beam with a thud. Whatever the beam was made of, magnets stuck to it. Scarlet leaned all her weight back on the line, and it held. A few brave stormtroopers poked their heads around the corner to take shots, but the blistering return fire from Han and Leia drove them back. One of them caught a blaster shot in the eye of his helmet and dropped, half in and half out of the round doorway.
Do we go one at a time or all at once?
Scarlet asked.
Oh, we're all leaving right now,
Han assured her.
Leia, go! I'm right behind you.
Leia ran past him, but he was too busy firing at the doorway to watch her attach herself to the line.
Han, go!
She shouted, and a wave of blaster fire flew past him as she opened up the doorway. Han turned and ran to the edge of the platform, firing back over his shoulder as he went. Scarlet and Leia had both attached the end of the line to their utility belts, so Han just ran at them full speed, dove into a bear hug around them, and launched all three of them off the edge of the grating. Scarlet yelped when Han's arm gripped her injured elbow, and Leia gasped as he squeezed all the air out of her. Han looked down. Nothing between him and the almost white-hot planetary core but a few thousand kilometers of empty space. Galassian's tumbling body was too far away to see. A second later, they were above the next platform, and Scarlet released the line. They crashed to the metal grating in a knot. Han wound up on the bottom, with Leia's elbow in his eye and Scarlet's knee in his stomach.
Ouch!
He said as they climbed off him. He didn't have time for more complaining. A few blaster shots hit the grating and nearby wall. Scarlet raced to open the platform's door, and Leia dived through, chased by incoming fire. Han stood and fired a few shots back at the stormtroopers, but at that range, any hits on either side would be completely up to luck. One of the remaining troopers wasn't firing, just looking across the gap at them, head cocked to the side in an obvious, "You gotta be kidding me" pose. Han fired off a few more shots to keep them off balance, then followed Scarlet and Leia through the door. Scarlet shut it immediately behind him, and the sound of blaster shots hitting it echoed through the wall. They were in a small chamber, with one long sloping shaft leading up at the end. A platform like the one they'd ridden down sat at the bottom.
I hope that thing has power,
Han said. Scarlet limped toward it.
It seems like everything down here is still powered up.
I hope you're right, Han said. Because there's no other way out of this room. And going back out onto the platform right now seems like a terrible idea. Also, the planet is imploding.
Scarlet began flipping switches on the control panel, whispering to herself while she worked. Han heard the word blue and realized she was repeating the code from their last ride. His first thought was,
I hope the same code means up.
His second was,
how does she remember it at all?
When the massive metallic clang came and the elevator started to climb, Han sent a silent thank you to whatever force of the universe protected heroes and fools. A new round of tremors hit, shaking the floor hard enough to knock him to his knees. Scarlet held on to the control panel to stay upright, but Leia was knocked onto her backside with a thump. Hot wind rushed past them, blowing Scarlet's dark hair into wings on the sides of her head. Han smelled hot metal and lubricant. He hoped the Kakaibak had built their transport as well as they had their control panels. When the shaking stopped, Leia climbed to her feet with a grunt and a wince.
I'm going to need a very long soak and a very hot bath after this trip. You know,
Scarlet said to Han, eyes narrowing,
I spent 2 years of my life tracking down the leads that eventually led to this place. 2 years of dangerous undercover work. And when we found it, you blew it up on a whim.
Wasn't a whim, he replied. It was intentional and well thought out.
Don't blame yourself, Leia said to Scarlet. With Han, it's easy to mistake well thought out for spur of the moment. They look exactly the same.
As much as I'd like to argue the point, we don't have time,
Han said, then pulled out his comlink.
Chewie, buddy, you there?
The only answer was static.
Chewie, I hope you're not sleeping, because we're all gonna die. We seem to be high enough to get through if you want to call Luke with an update,
Han said to Leia. As she nodded and turned her attention to her comlink, Han went back to Chewbacca.
We need the Falcon up right now. Get over to the temple. Jungle's too thick there to land, so we'll climb up to the top for pickup.
Chewie rumbled out a reply and closed the connection.
Again with the climbing to get picked up,
Scarlet said with a sigh.
No stormtroopers shooting at us this time,
Han replied.
No, you're right. Instead, we get a planet blowing up below us.
Just saying, it's not exactly the same.
You done?
Leia said to them.
We're almost at the top.
The room they found themselves in had a doorway leading out to the narrow, disturbing hallways they'd come in through. The glittering and the strange alloy walls seemed more frenetic now, as if the architecture itself knew it was in danger. Scarlet pulled up her datapad, but the holographic map was as fuzzy and imprecise as a dream. Scarlet closed it out, shut her eyes in concentration, and then a moment later, opened them.
Follow me, she said, and took off at a fast limp.
Han shrugged and followed, Leia right behind. Scarlet did seem to know where she was going. She took several turns that Han didn't remember from the first time, but at the end, they wound up at the glowing metal hatch. The planet cooperated by keeping the shaking to a minimum while they made their way to the upper temple. But the minute they stepped foot onto the stone floor, all restraint was lost. The planet shuddered like a bantha with spurs in its flanks, bucking and shaking as if it were trying to throw them off. After several seconds of tossing them from one side of the corridor to the other, the quaking settled into a sullen but constant low rumble.
Run! Scarlet said.
Han was already running, Leia's hand in his. He grabbed Scarlet's as he went by. If he lost either of them in the dark of the temple, he'd never have time to track them down. If there were stormtroopers left at the site, they were hiding or had run off into the jungle. Imperial-issue equipment lay scattered on the ground, much of it knocked over by the quakes, some of it crushed flat by stones falling from the ceiling. As they sprinted, a massive block of stone the size of a landspeeder dropped from above and cut their passage in half. Scarlet didn't hesitate, turning at the next junction and leading them through a side passage to get around it. Dust was filtering down from the ceiling, thickening the air. A pit in the floor opened a few feet ahead as they ran, and Scarlet yelled, "Jump!" They didn't break stride as all three leapt across the abyss. Then two turns and a long sprint later, they were out in the free air of the dying planet. All around them, the jungle was bucking and rolling like the surface of a stormy ocean. The massive trees cracked and split with emotion. Leaves the size of starships fell out of the sky, crushing anything beneath. Energy fields filled the skies with rainbows where the sheer forces were enough to refract the light. The vast planetary mechanism was fighting to regain its equilibrium and failing. Han jumped up, grabbed the edge of the first level of the pyramid-shaped temple, and pulled himself onto it. He reached down to help Scarlet up, then ran to climb the next level while she hauled Leia up. Far to the east, a cloud of dust rose toward the sky. When they'd gone up a dozen levels or so, the layers got shorter, allowing them to run individually and make much better time. As he jumped from step to step, 100 meters above the rolling jungle floor, Han pulled out his comlink and yelled to Chewbacca,
"Where are you?" "What do you mean the startup cycle keeps shorting out? You better make this work, pal, or we're all gonna die."
Passing him, Leia pulled herself up onto a square stone block and stopped. They were at the top. Scarlet joined her and bent over at the waist, panting. Han looked around and saw nothing but the pyramid of stone below them and the quivering jungle all around. No ship in sight. Scarlet gasped. Han followed her gaze. To the east, where the great plume of dust had risen, the ground was crumbling away. Island-sized swaths of jungle fell away, and the white gold light of the unstable core blazed out. Whatever forces had kept the planet steady until now were failing, and Cymarti 5 was eating itself.
"Is he going to make it?"
Scarlet asked. Han thought she meant Chewbacca, so he started to answer, but Leia cut him off.
"He should be here any second."
As if summoned by her words, an X-Wing screeched out of the sky toward them. It came to a hovering stop a few feet from the top of the temple. Out of Leia's comlink, Luke's boyish voice yelled,
"Get on!"
Leia climbed onto a wing, and Scarlet followed.
"This is not a permanent solution," Han said.
They couldn't exactly ride off the planet on the wing of a starfighter, but he followed. Buying himself a few extra seconds was what he did, when it was all he could do.
Hold on,
Luke said, and the X-Wing pulled up away from the temple. The planet gave a massive shudder that blew trees the size of office towers into the sky. The entire temple beneath them fell into the planet in a cloud of dust and stone and scorching hot air. A black dot on the rapidly eroding horizon turned into a disc, and then into the Falcon, flying at them at high speed. A cloud of pale yellow dust bloomed up around them, obscuring the ship for a moment. A hot wind stinking of sulfur whipped them, pressing grit into Han's eyes.
I'm not going to be able to hold on for much longer,
Scarlet said, her voice as calm as if she were talking about getting lunch, rather than plunging to her death as the planet below her tore itself apart.
You won't need to,
Han said, and a dark shadow rose through the dust below them. The Falcon edged up a centimeter at a time, until all three could drop onto it and scramble through the hatch.
Punch it, Chewie!
Han yelled as he ran to the cockpit. Chewbacca already had the Falcon flying straight up at its fastest atmospheric speed.
Get belted in!
Han yelled to Scarlet and Leia.
Hyperdrive working?
He asked as he settled into his seat.
Mm-hmm.
The Wookiee growled out an affirmative.
Get us a calculation for the current fleet position. We're going there in a hurry.
While Chewbacca worked, Han scanned the space around them. 8 X-Wings flew in honor guard formation behind them. There were no Imperial ships in sight. The blue sky was streaked with clouds as jagged as claw marks. As he watched, the blue deepened to indigo, and the first scattering of stars showed through.
Looks like we're all good for jump,
Luke said, his voice compressed and flattened by the headset.
That planet is looking unstable,
Wedge's voice said.
Notice that,
Han replied, throwing the throttle to maximum to put as much space as possible between the Falcon and the planet while Chewbacca finished prepping the jump.
Be nice,
Luke said. The sky was almost black now, the stars bright and wide and scattered.
Be ready to jump,
Han said to all the following ships.
In 5, 4, 3, 2...
The planet detonated behind them, hurling a massive shockwave of energy and vaporized matter after them.
1.
The stars disappeared in a swirl of light.
Chapter 32. The vast dark ocean of space glittered with light. Each star was the chance of a habitable planet or moon, an independent station or asteroid base. The brightness beckoned and consoled, promising that there was life and energy and civilization all around, that the void could be overcome. And when the violence that life and stars carried with them was too much, the emptiness also offered safety. The Falcon had jumped into the middle of General Riken's battle preparations. The young fighter pilots had been disappointed that a pitched battle around Cymarti had been avoided. The admirals had been relieved. The sting at losing the great new weapon was pulled by knowing that the Emperor didn't have it. If there were people who were relieved that the Rebellion hadn't captured the prize either, they were quiet about it. That didn't mean there was no joy to be taken.
I've read the reports, Captain Solo,
Colonel Harsin said, tapping uncomfortably on his desk.
You certainly went above and beyond any of our expectations of you.
Thanks,
Han said, ignoring the implied criticism.
So you're ready to pay me?
Harsin's jaw stiffened, and he looked at the decking.
I wanted to discuss that with you. I noticed that your requested payment was somewhat larger than...
I signed on for a jump to Siorin, Han said. We went from there to Kiamer to Cymarti.
Scenic route has more overhead.
But the agreement...
Chewbacca growled and leaned forward. Harsin flinched and leaned back.
The option was to let the Empire kill everyone on Kiamer, break the Rebellion, and get control of the Kakaibak weapon.
Hans said.
If next time you want me to stop and renegotiate, we can do that too.
Of course not, Harson said. It may simply take a few days to arrange the transfer of the balance. I'll need to get approval.
You do that.
Chewbacca howled and waved a massive fist. Han thought he was overplaying it a little, but he didn't complain. It was the simple pleasures, after all, that made life worth living. Han stood up, touched two fingers to his temple in mock salute, and headed out to the corridor. The comfort he felt getting back to the Rebel fleet, with its cobbled-together ships and third-hand air recyclers, made Han a little nervous. He didn't like to think he was getting too attached, but so far he'd dealt with that by not thinking about it, and the strategy seemed to be working. Together, he and Chewbacca headed down the narrow metal stairway, then turned to port and headed for the fighter hangar and the Millennium Falcon. Neither spoke. But Chewbacca huffed quietly under his breath. It was something he did when he was feeling particularly self-satisfied. There was even a little spring in the Wookiee's step. As they stepped out into the chaos of ships, toolkits, coolant delivery tubes, service droids, and orange jumpsuited pilots, Han leaned in toward him.
And what's got you in such a good mood?
Chewbacca yelped twice, lifting his chin to indicate the hangar and everyone in it.
Of course we didn't die,
Han said.
We were safe the whole time.
Chewbacca let out a chuffing whine.
Because I was there,
Han said.
That's why.
Han!
He turned. Luke waved from the side of the hangar, and beside him C-3PO echoed the gesture. Half a dozen other fighter pilots were gathered around them. Han thought he saw the glimmer of hero worship in some of their eyes. Han waved back, then looked toward the Millennium Falcon. The scar where Bossin's homing beacon had struck home was still bright, and the panels above the rear deflector shield were off, exposing the wires and energy couplings beneath. The thought of the hours of work ahead made Han's shoulders ache. It could wait a little bit longer.
Hold on a minute, Chewie,
he said. He sauntered over to the group.
Hey, kid, what's going on?
I was just telling Graham and Ardana about what happened at Cymarty,
Luke said. Han nodded, a knowing half-smile on his face. He turned to the other pilots.
He tell you how he took down an Imperial Star Destroyer by himself?
I didn't do it by myself, Luke said. There were eight of us, and Wedge led the attack. And no, I was telling them about how you and Leia blew up the planet in order to stop the Empire.
Yeah, well, all right. That's a good story.
Did you really ride up out of the atmosphere on the outside of an X-Wing?
One of the pilots asked. She looked even younger than Luke. Pretty soon the Rebellion was going to be taking them out of diapers and putting them straight into pilot seats, Han thought. He shrugged.
It wasn't as impressive as it sounds, he said. Chewie was right there to catch us.
The pilots' gazes all turned to Chewbacca, who stood a little taller and preened.
What are you guys doing next?
Luke asked.
If there's not another emergency, we're fixing the ship,
Han said.
What about after?
The younger pilot asked.
I'm pretty sure there'll be another emergency by then,
Han said. They all laughed like it had been a joke. And it had been, mostly.
I was just going to see Leia, Luke said, stowing his helmet. You want to come?
You want me to?
Han said. And then when he saw Luke thinking about the question, quickly added,
Sure, why not? Her worshipfulness might be able to get them to shake my credits loose a little faster.
As they passed through the ship, Han listened to the chatter around them. Most of it was about Kiamur and Cymarty. But there was other news and gossip. A fleet of unidentified black ships had been sighted near Thedavio 7, and no one knew if they were some kind of new Imperial design or something different. The uncle of a friend on Dantooine had been in a cantina when a bunch of Imperial troops had swooped in and carried off the barkeep.
The survey mission on Cerebon had run into Imperial probes, taking it off the list of possible locations for the new base. The Rebel Alliance was built on stories as much as it was steel or hyperspace engines. What had happened on Kiamur and Cymarti was thick in the air right now, but new events would come and wash it away. It wouldn't be long before the fact that Han could have ended the war and didn't, or that the Empire could have had its foot on the neck of the galaxy forever and he'd stopped it, were just bits of trivia, easy to forget in the press of stories that the Rebellion told about itself. They found Leia in a meeting room off the command center. The screens around the walls were bright with schematics of the ships and the fleet. A map of the galaxy with half a dozen tiny sectors marked off in blue, and a constant feed from the sensor logs. The little red R3 unit that Hunter Moss had owned was in a corner with R2-D2, the pair of them whistling and chirping away to each other, while C-3PO shifted his head back and forth between them, trying to keep track of the machine language conversation. Leia was wearing a simple gray jumpsuit, and her hair was pulled back. Scarlet Hark, sitting across from her, was 1,000 times gaudier, in a flowing gown of emerald and crimson, with her hair braided in an elaborate curve that made her seem like a human flower that had just bloomed.
"Solo," the spy said, "I was hoping I'd see you before I left."
"Sure," Han said. "You're looking,
ridiculous, isn't it?"
Scarlet said, a mad gleam in her eyes.
"I'm Feata Bescalata, queen of the Amurian Opera, on tour with the company. We're going to Sertapan Station."
"A very dangerous place,"
C-3PO said, waving a golden arm.
"I have tried to warn them, but no one ever seems to listen to me."
"Uh-huh. What's happening there?"
Luke asked, visibly trying not to stare at her.
"Rumor has it that an engineer out there has built a blaster that ignores deflector shields,"
Scarlet said.
"It's probably Bantha fodder, but if it's not, I want to make sure we have it and no one else does."
Leia frowned.
"Can you sing opera?"
"No,"
Scarlet said.
"Not even a little bit. This should be hilarious."
From the corner, Hunter Moss's R3 squealed. Scarlet stood up, her dress clinking like a crystal chandelier in a breeze.
"Thank you, R3,
she said.
"I know we're short on time."
"Wait," Han said. "You understand what it's saying?"
"No, but I guess well,"
she said, putting out her hand.
"Thanks for the ride, Captain. I hope we can work together again sometime."
"It'll cost double,"
he said, shaking her hand.
"You're a pain in the behind."
"Likewise."
Chewbacca grunted and muttered, folding his arms across his chest. Scarlet paused in front of him, her palm on his hand.
"Me too, sweetheart,"
she said.
"But I'll be in touch when I can."
Chewbacca swept Scarlet up in a massive hug. She wrapped her arms around his neck, and they stayed that way for long enough that Han started feeling a little uncomfortable. When the Wookiee put her down, Scarlet gestured to the R3 unit, and the two of them left together.
"Are you tearing up?"
Han asked. Chewbacca barked a sharp reply.
"All right,"
Han said.
"Just asking. No need to get hot about it."
"We just wanted to come make sure you were doing okay,"
Luke said, touching Leia's arm.
"After you got back, you seemed a little upset."
Han looked up at Chewbacca and mouthed, "She did?" Chewbacca rolled his eyes and nodded. Leia patted Luke's hand and sat down.
"I'll be fine. There's been a lot of fallout after Kiamur. We lost a lot of people,"
she said, and her voice had a cold tone that Han thought he might understand.
"But the ones who did survive have renewed their hatred of the Empire. I've had contact from several people and groups that I hadn't expected to hear from. We'll come out of this stronger than we went in."
"That can only be a good thing,"
C-3PO said.
"It will if we win, 3PO,"
Leia said.
And if we lose, it's just more bodies in the graveyard.
She didn't say the words, but Han understood her humorless smile.
He thought of Bossin again.
The least likely martyr of the rebellion. The universe was a big place, and strange things happened there. From the command center, Commander Akbar's voice grated and snapped. Han didn't recognize the voices that responded.
Any regrets?
Luke asked. From anyone else, the question would have seemed like prying. From the kid, it was too open-hearted and sincere to take offense at.
Leia shrugged.
Some,
she said.
But I don't know what I'd have done differently. Regret that I couldn't find a better way through than the one I found. Does that count?
What about you?
Luke asked. And it took Han a few seconds to realize Luke was talking to him. He opened his mouth to say no, then paused, shrugged.
You know, he said, there were a bunch of critters on Symarty who were just trying to make it through another day in their crappy little swamp. They didn't deserve what happened to them.
Leia raised an eyebrow. That's your regret?
She said.
Why not? It's a good one.
What about having the key to end the war in your hand and choosing to throw it away?
Leia said, her voice a little hard with sorrow. Just for a moment, he saw behind her facade. From this moment on, she would be carrying a little more of every death in the war. Every adolescent fighter pilot who got shot down by a TIE fighter. Every spy who got exposed and executed in an Imperial prison. Every foot soldier who fell under a stormtrooper's blaster rifle would be in part because she'd had the chance to take the power of the Kakaibak and Symarty V, and she hadn't. It was easy to forget that she'd seen Alderaan die. She hid the guilt of surviving so well that it could blend right in with the normal pressures of commanding an army, or leading a rebellion. He thought back to all the things he'd said about Kiamer. He wanted to say something comforting, but he wasn't sure what that would be. Han made do with answering the question.
It wasn't the key to stopping the war, he said. It was the key to stopping anyone ever from doing something I didn't like. Stopping the war would just have been the start. And who wouldn't have done that? Who wouldn't have used it to keep some innocent people alive and stop the thugs from getting more power? Something like that, though. You can't stop once you've started.
Too much responsibility?
Leia asked. The barb felt almost like he'd offered her an apology. Almost like she'd accepted it.
The responsibility's not the problem, he said. A galaxy without smugglers and thieves? How's that a better place? No, your worship. You've got to leave some room for people like me.
Do I really?
She said.
You really do,
Han said.
Sometimes you are people like me.
Leia's gaze softened a degree. Luke looked from one to the other of them, a hint of confusion in his bright blue eyes. For a trembling moment, something dangerous seemed about to happen. But then Leia pulled back. Her smile turned sardonic, and the facade fell back in place.
Sometimes I am,
she agreed.
But then I bathe.
Chewbacca snorted, and Luke chuckled, looking relieved. Han held up his hands.
Fine, sweetheart. You can say anything you want. We both know how you really feel.
You aren't still pretending I was jealous of Scarlet Hark, are you?
It's nothing to be ashamed of,
Han said.
I'm a good-looking guy. And back on Sioran, I really didn't have a choice. I had to take my clothes off.
Why did you have to take your clothes off?
Luke asked. Han shrugged.
They were wrinkled. That's not the point. The point is, it's perfectly normal for a woman, or in this case, two women like her, to be attracted to a man like me.
Chewbacca howled.
She did turn away, yeah,
Han said.
But you know, she probably peaked.
She did,
Leia said. For a moment, the room went silent.
Han felt a blush rising up his neck and fought it back.
See?
He said, poking Chewbacca's knee with a finger.
She peeked.
The Wookiee didn't answer. Around them, the business of the war went on, as it would for the months or years until one side or the other won. Han wondered, when that time came, if he'd still be a rebel, and whom he'd be rebelling against.
You know,
Luke said after a while,
with Saimardi and Saraban out of the running, there aren't a lot of places left we can build the new base.
As long as it's not Hoth,
Han said.
That's a miserable planet.
We'll find something,
Leia said.
It won't be easy, and it won't come without a cost. But we'll find it. We always do.
And now, Silver and Scarlet, a quick adventure featuring Scarlet Hark, written by James S.A. Corey.
This is Ileana Kadushin.
Sidiya Chan,
the guard said, repeating the name on my identification papers. Yes, I lied. He handed the papers back, nodded his massive green-gray head, and stepped aside. I tried for the cool, polite smile I imagined a high-level arms manufacturer would spare to a doorman, and walked into the club. After the heat and humidity, stepping into the cool, dry air was like arriving on another world. Ulan was a barge city on an open sea, its buildings linked by bridges and separated by canals in a constantly shifting architecture. This month, the currents had taken it north, almost to the planetary equator. Next, it might drift south, until blue-green ice pounded against the building's foundations, and frost covered the bridge's handrails. By then, I planned to be back with the rebel fleet, deliveries made, and my latest false self a fading memory. If I was still in Ulan tomorrow, it would mean something unexpected had happened. Given my track record, it could go either way. The private club was built as a single wide circular room with windows 3 meters high at the outer edge. At the center, a hub of black made up the private meeting rooms and lifts to the upper levels. A recording of Bith harp music filled the air. The reproduction so clean, the notes felt like they had edges. Outside the great windows, the city curved up, shifted, fell away, then curved up again, carried by the ocean swell. A dozen brightly colored skimmers buzzed along the canal. The human and Quarren drivers seemingly in competition to see who could be the most reckless. I tugged down on the hem of my jacket and looked around casually at the dozen or so club members lounging at tables and couches. The man I was looking for was human, older, and I'd seen only pictures and holograms of him. Trying to seem nonchalant, I touched my comlink. L4?
Ma'am?
The droid's deep, gravelly voice came. How sure are we that he's here?
96% certainty.
Okay, so run down that last 4% for me.
The general might have been discovered, and the individual who rode his flyer down from the orbital base might have been an imposter,
my lookout droid said.
Trouble inside, ma'am.
Just trying to find him. Let me take another pass, I said, and dropped the connection. Sidiya Chan, security engineer for the Ceylon Tech Cooperative, would have marched around the room with the crisp, studied movement and impassive expression of the ex-military operative that she was. Since I was playing her, I faked it. A serving droid floated to me and asked in a carefully designed voice whether it could bring me anything to drink. Sidiya Chan didn't use intoxicants, so I asked for tea. The men and women at the tables and couches glanced at me, and then away. Polite and distant, in a way that would have told me I was at the heart of the Empire, even if I'd woken up there with my mind blanked. I'd started the operation months before, following a rumor that the warden of an Imperial political prison might have been growing sympathetic to some of his prisoners. It had taken weeks to run down. Since it wasn't an Imperial warden, there wasn't a prison involved. And General Kaskan didn't actually have much sympathy for the rebellion. But apart from every single bit of information being wrong, things had gone pretty well. I tracked Kaskan to the Antia system, found his clandestine lover in Ulan, and opened negotiations. The whole process had been about as safe and certain as balancing a Verdorian fire rat on my nose. But I'd managed it. All except the last part. The actual meeting and exchange. I was on my third time around the room and almost done with my cup of tea when I recognized him. He was sitting alone at a small, high table almost against the window. His hand was pressed to his mouth, his gaze fixed on the glittering crystal and silver of the complex across the canal from us. Once I spotted him, I could forgive myself for not recognizing him at once. All the pictures I'd seen had been of a straight-backed, high-chinned man with bright black eyes and a challenging glare. The man at the table was slumped over. His dark skin had an ashen tone, and his eyes were wet and rheumy. When he shifted in his seat, I could see the physical power in his body, but when he was still, he looked like someone's grandpa. In my work, I'd seen the whole spectrum of betrayers, from the ones who were afraid of getting caught, to those who were excited by being naughty, to others for whom it was just business. The man at the table wasn't any of those. He looked sickened by it. That was bad. I put on Sadia Chan's cool smile and started over.
"Ma'am?"
L43PO said. "It's all right, I found him."
"We have another problem. A flyer has landed on the tower's upper pad. Registration identifies it as the private craft of Nuian Solanus."
"Maybe he's a club member?" I said, not breaking stride.
"The chances of the Imperial interrogator who has been investigating the general arriving at the meeting by coincidence are..."
"I was joking, sweetie. Thank you for the warning. Talk to the club's computer system if you can, and try to slow him down. I'll be quick."
"Yes, ma'am."
I slid into the chair across from Kaskan. He looked up, and for a moment, surprise registered in his eyes. Then a slow, rueful smile. "You're Hark, then?" "Yes, sir," I said. "I was expecting a man." "That's a common prejudice," I said. "I won't take it personally." I plucked the credit chit out of my jacket pocket and placed it on the table. The black tabletop made the silver chit seem brighter than it was. The general scowled at it and took a red enameled memory crystal from his pocket. I waited, forcing my body to stay relaxed and calm while the sense of the chief interrogator landing his ship 5 levels above me crawled up my spine. "I take it those are the plans we discussed," I said, trying to make it sound casual and still keep the ball rolling. The general scowled and nodded at the same time. The grip of his finger and thumb on the memory crystal didn't relax. I had the sense that if I reached out for it, he'd pluck it away from me. When he spoke, his voice was low and precise. "Have you ever betrayed something?" I felt my heart drop into my belly. Last-minute changes of heart were always a hazard in this kind of operation. Usually, I could budget a few hours to get the target drunk in maudlin, sing a few songs about glory and lost love, and pretty much provide whatever hand-holding and consolation they needed to make the exchange. This was not one of those times. If he decided to turn me down, the plans for the next generation Star Destroyers would fade away from me like smoke in a fist. Also, I'd probably get killed. Not the outcomes I was aiming for. "I have, but not lightly," I said. "I always had my reasons. Do you regret them? Your betrayals?" "No." He dropped the memory crystal into his palm and closed his fist around it. There were tears in his eyes. In other circumstances, I would have found the gesture less frustrating. "I have been a loyal subject of the Emperor. I have followed the orders of my commanders. I told myself we were bringing order to the galaxy, because that was what they told us. Who was I to disagree?" I leaned forward and put my hand gently on his wrist. "I understand," I said. "If we do this thing," Kaskan said, "I will be responsible for the deaths of thousands of soldiers." "And if we don't? How many people will die if we call the whole thing off? And will they be soldiers or innocent people who happen to live on worlds the Emperor has decided don't pay him enough respect? No one else has access to these. When they get out, it will be known that I have turned against them. They will slaughter me for this." His fingers didn't loosen their grip. I switched tack, taking my hand off his and tapping the silver chit. "There's enough money on this to make you safe. You'll be able to fade into the rim. Find a quiet spot, a new name, a new face. You'll be all right. Will I, Hark? Does my conscience count for nothing?" I took a deep breath, let it out slowly, made my shoulders relax and my expression soften. The serving droid hissed up to my left with a fresh cup of tea. The city outside the windows rose and fell. I had maybe 2 minutes. "Of course it counts," I said. "I'm getting the sense, sir, that there's something you want to tell me. You know I commanded the assault on Barunin." "I do," I said. "I lost people I cared about in that attack." "The cities were undefended," he said. "As soon as we received the order for the bombardment, I knew I would have to betray my Emperor, my Empire. Those deaths brought no order, only fear. They were wrong." "Didn't call off the attack, though," I said, more sharply than I should have. He didn't flinch or tighten his grip on the plans. "It would have made no difference. I would have been executed, and my second-in-command would have given the order. Insubordination is a fool's way to die. I have my honor, but I am not a fool." I had maybe a minute and a half. This wasn't going well. "Afterward," General Kaskan said, "there were any number of collaborators. They came to every outpost we made, mewling and crying, telling us that they had information for sale, where the rebels were hiding, who had aided them, where their caches of weapons were. For a few credits, they would have informed on their mothers." "They were desperate," I said. "They were afraid." He turned to look at me straight on. I hadn't realized until now that he'd been avoiding my eyes. There was a pain in his expression that took my breath away. I'd been working underground for a long time, and somewhere along the way, I'd let Kaskan and men like him turn into a kind of faceless enemy to me. Well, here was his face, and the four-square leader of soldiers wasn't in him. "I am desperate," he said softly. I am afraid. Those people I despised, and I despise them, Hark. I have now become. I am selling the trust I have been given for money, for safety, for the beautiful lie that I can be a better man by making this devil's bargain. They were refugees of a planet-wide military attack. You're one of the most powerful men in the Empire, I said. Seems to me you're in a kind of a different position. And does that speak better of me? Or worse? Better, I said, mostly because it seemed like the answer most likely to get him to open his fingers. I wondered if I lunged for him, if I'd be able to get the plans and run out the door before anyone tackled me. It didn't seem likely. And if I told him we were both about to get arrested by the Empire, I didn't like my chances for moving the process forward. I disagree, the general said. This trade is ignoble. It leaves me no better than them. I cannot take your money. He was backing out. My comlink chimed. Grimacing, I touched it. Bad time, L4. Kind of in the middle of something?
Ma'am, I have done all that I could. That will require your attention.
Kaskan opened his grip. The red enamel caught the light from the window, shining in his palm like he was cupping a handful of blood. I looked over to the dark wall of private rooms and lifts at the club center. Time for Plan C. Can you hold that thought? I said, holding up a finger. I'll be right back. I walked toward the lifts, thinking through all the ways this could go, and how I could affect which one actually happened. The serving droid swooped in to see if I wanted something for my tea, and I waved it away. I couldn't tell if my unsteadiness was the adrenaline, or if the city had hit some bigger waves than usual. L4, I said to my comlink, do we know where he is?
Interrogator Solanus is in a lift, coming toward the main floor, ma'am.
Can we shut down the lift?
I have already done so once, ma'am. He is using his security override. I am locked out.
A whole host of solutions crumbled and died. On the one hand, less to think about. On the other, they were the ones I liked best. I was over halfway to the center. Which lift is he in? To my right, a lift door slid open, and an older Quarren woman stepped out. Not Solanus. L4, which lift is he in?
Query, ma'am.
Sooner's better.
6.
I angled off to my left, not running but walking faster. My choices were getting thin quickly. The coppery taste of panic filled my mouth and I ignored it. The lift doors were black enamel and smooth as a mirror. I made my reflection look calm, prim, maybe a little bored. The difference between safe and too late was going to be seconds. The doors shuttered and slid open. Nuian Solanus stood in the lift car, the light seeming to fall into his black uniform like it was woven out of black holes. He started to step out, and I faked my way in front of him, then corrected when he did, making it into a little dance of awkwardness and social misstep. His scowl could have peeled the shell off a key beetle. Sorry, I said. And then, aren't you Interrogator Solanus? He had time to register surprise, and I planted a straight kick just above his pelvis. The blow was designed to stagger him back, and it worked. The lift door slid closed, and I slipped between them as he regained his balance. I pushed the controls for the landing pad. Close quarters fighting, especially when the opponent was so much bigger than me, meant grappling techniques. I started with an elbow lock, but he shrugged it off through equal parts luck and brute strength. He hit me twice in the ribs, but the cramped lift car made it hard to get much power behind the blows, giving me the opportunity for a leg sweep that took him down. Once I got my arm around his neck, it was over. But the choke took long, terrible seconds to take effect. When he finally went limp under me, we were already at the landing pad. I hit the controls to take me back down before anyone could see a disheveled weapons engineer straddling the unconscious body of an Imperial interrogator. I had one dose of sedative left in my shoe. I used it on him, stopped the car on the third level, dragged Sulanis to the women's room, and propped him in a stall. All in all, it took less than 5 minutes. On the way back down, I tugged my costume back into place, smoothing out the wrinkles while I tried to think how to coax the general back into making the trade. As soon as the lift doors opened, I knew it was over. The little table we'd been sitting at was empty. Kaskan was nowhere I could see. Little wisps of steam wafted from my cup of tea as I came close. The sinking in my gut was disappointment and anger and frustration. But there was something else, too. Some part of my mind that told me I was missing something. This wasn't what it looked like.
Ma'am?
L43PO said on my comlink.
Is all well?
On the black table, the silver chit with Kaskan's payment glowed. Beside it, the bright red of the memory crystal. He'd left the plans and the payment, too. He was going to get caught, and he knew it. And there was nothing I could do to stop it. When I looked up, he was there. Outside the window, walking across the canal bridge and away from me. His back was straight and proud, his head high. It was the first time he'd seemed like the man from the holograms, a warrior, ready to fight, ready to die. I scooped up silver and red and put them in my pocket before I touched my comlink. Time to go. Get the skimmer warmed up. And let's get back to the ship. We need to be out of here before Sulanis wakes up.
Yes, ma'am. May I ask whether you got what you came for?
I did, I said.
And the general?
Kaskan reached the other side of the bridge, turned right, and stepped out of my line of sight. He did too.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Empire and Rebellion, Honor Among Thieves, by James S.A. Corey. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Aaron Blank. Star Wars, Empire and Rebellion, Honor Among Thieves, and Silver and Scarlet is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, LLC, and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2014. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.